Tucson and Southern Arizona, good morning to you. Happy Thursday, October 8th. Welcome into the 1030 The Voice studio. I'm your host, Zach Yenser, for this hour of Tipping Point, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. I'm excited about this show today. I got a good one for you. We're going to kick off here in a minute with Cindy Winston, a candidate for the Tucson Unified School District Governing Board. October is our month where we are hitting that race hard, having all six candidates in, because I think it's one of the most important seats up for election. There are three seats, in fact, up for election this year. A lot of change, a lot of opportunity for some new faces and some new voices on the board. So we're focusing on that here this month and today. When Cindy and I are done, I'm looking forward to Voice of America White House Bureau Chief Stephen Herman is expected to be calling in to discuss the president's case of COVID. No virtual debating as of this morning, and political appointees alleging Voice of America anti-Trump bias. We'll talk about that as well. But first and foremost, here we are. Cindy Winston, welcome into the studio. How are you today?
I'm very fine. Thank you, Zach, so much for having me this morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, thanks for making the time to come in. So this is the question I ask all candidates the first time we're together in studio. And you might laugh at this one because it is the name of the show. What was your tipping point moment? What was that moment where you got up one morning and said, I'm in this race. I got to be in one of those seats. Here we go. What got you into this race, Cindy Winston?
Last October, when I made the decision to do this, I was disappointed and frustrated, like so many people in Tucson, that there was name-calling. There's DUIs, just drama for the wrong reasons for kids. And that's sort of what compelled me to run for this. And then when the pandemic hit and the lack of understanding of science, man, I was like, I think I was born to do this. I think I need to do, I'm still compelled and I'm still excited about the challenge.
Now you are, I believe, an award-winning science teacher, 28 years of classroom experience. You've taught elementary, middle, high school. A lot of people will talk about the importance of having a teacher on the Tucson Unified School District Board. There seems to be a priority for either parents or teachers, people who are involved in the profession. Do you feel like that's a value add for your candidacy? What do you think that helps you bring to the race?
Absolutely. Any Pinterest fans in the house, man, you see that meme all the time. The people making decisions about education are not in education, and that is also has been frustrating for me. And getting at the tail end of my career, I'm 54 years old, and having fought so hard for one school and being in four different states, and just, Zach, just seeing a pattern, you know, different state, same issues, I think compels me as well.
I was going to ask you about the three things that are most important to you as you're running your platform. And in fact, on your website, you list those three things. Couldn't be easier. What are the three key areas that you would focus on as a board member should you sit in one of these seats in the fall?
Well, first and foremost is fiscal responsibility. I feel like there's a lack of trust in Tucson when it comes to how money is being spent. And that's certainly a valid concern. We have not voted for a bond issue to support education in almost 20 years. Yet, the last election, we voted for an animal shelter, which I voted for, by the way. You know, I was very excited, $14 million animal shelter. But I'm like, okay, folks, if we could do this for dogs and cats, I think we need to start thinking about kids. And people don't trust. And I understand, you know, even in my own household, you know, when a bond issue came up, I can remember my husband saying, Cindy, I've heard too many stories from you, therefore I'm not, and I can't argue, I couldn't argue with that, you know. So fiscal responsibility, a serious investment in getting our schools to the 21st century.
TUSD is crumbling, literally.
Dilapidated, I think would be a good, a good way to describe it. Certainly having been there for the last 5 years and not having a restroom for, for my online kids to go to. I think they thought that we were an online school and therefore we were not humans and we did not exist. So that was kind of ironic. But so capital improvement and then teacher recruitment and retention. Because I tell you, Zach, I'm married to a doctor, okay? And I'm white, you know, white privilege. The kids are on to something. We need to start listening. And the reason why I could do this career is because I had him to back me up and support me. And the reason why I could take off summers and be rested and ready for the next academic year. Our teachers are working their butts off, and they need to be advocated for. And I've been in the trenches, and I know what, well, particularly with this online thing, I know a little bit, have some kinship with them, what they're facing. So anyway, that's my three.
Yeah. And in the second segment, I'd love to dive into those a little more with you.
Okay.
I've got some questions on each of those. Would love to hear more of your thoughts. Before we go to that first break, I want to talk about the big elephant in the room, one of the big elephants in the room, and that is COVID-19. The board is continuing to vote to extend out when hybrid education begins, hybrid being some of the days in the classroom, some of the days online. You know, Cindy, I've become more and more worried about those kids who are not being engaged in a virtual format. We know that even weeks and months of falling behind in education can cause a years-long ripple effect in our workforce development. We're seeing spread and infection rates lower, especially in the younger grades across the country. And so I've been asking all the candidates, what are your thoughts on the decisions that are being made? Are we doing it just right? Have we been too conservative? Should we have started hybrid already? Does it need to start way later than it's being proposed? This happened in the last week or so, Cindy. You're in the seat today. Hypothetically, pretend you're in the seat today. Would you make the same decision on the governing board as the current set have in terms of when we get our kids back in the classroom and even a hybrid model?
I wish, in deference to teachers and families, they only asked a week and a half ago what parents thought about it. And that should have happened a lot sooner. They had time to get feedback on that. But with that said, I'm actually going to be a substitute in Flowing Wells. I have my first job today, and I hear what you're saying. I'm eager to get back in there. But with that said, I'm a woman. I'm O positive. You know, there's some things I've heard scientifically, and I'm fairly healthy. You know, my problem is, though, across an inner city school district, you've got, I'm a young chicken, you know, like, I'm 54. Many of my colleagues were older than that. So I'm concerned for them being at risk. I'm concerned already for this classified staff that's already in there. You know, schools are open and TUSD has been running it for exceptional ed already.
Correct.
So I feel like we're learning some things and we know more than we used to. I don't like this hokey pokey approach, though. One foot in, one in, 2 feet, because that's unfair to teachers. Again, when I did a hybrid model, I ran a lab 3 days a week, and then 2 days a week I had just to work on computer stuff. Our teachers don't have that luxury. Like, every single day they're trying to figure out how to reach out to kids, how to teach the lessons. I'm kind of confused as to why, at least at the middle school and high school level, they didn't let their educational software just kind of handle that. Like, there's a thing called Apex. Back when I worked there, it was called Edgenuity. And you let that, the blessing for me when I did that was that that software delivered the instruction, and it also graded. The only things I graded were lab reports, because that's kind of hard to do in an objective multiple choice format. And then if kids were bored out of their mind and said, "Miss, I can't do this," then I would provide an alternative assignment. Well, let's do this. So there are some strategies for dealing with that would help with the stress that these teachers are going with. Now, my elementary folks, people don't give these men and women enough credit, or they teach everything. And that's the folks I'm actually worried about the most right now, because, again, they're responsible for all those subjects. And used to, the elective teachers would give them a break. The other folks I'm worried about are elective teachers, because they're trying to teach music and art and all these things. So I'm sorry, Zach. What was the original question?
the TUSD board just
what would be my hybrid
decision? Even earlier this week, in fact, and continued to push out even going to hybrid. Do you approve of that timeline? Would you do it faster or slower?
I approve of the timeline. I need them to take some stuff off teachers' plates. I need them to, so teachers, because doing that hybrid thing, like I said, you've got to have some time to just do the computer folks or the computer thing, you know, and then worry about instruction and then worry about family engagement.
You know, as we go to our first break here, we're going to come back with Cindy Winston, candidate for Tucson Unified School District Governing Board, and talk about your three areas of focus. But I just wanted to remark that I heard from you what I've heard from the other candidates. One thing seems to be a thread is communication. There's a lot of good work being done by Superintendent Trujillo, by the board. Mm-hmm. I've heard over and over and over again, Cindy, that communicating that out is still an issue. And how that creates trust or not is a huge issue. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to bring that up, not asking for a comment per se, just I hear that. I keep hearing communication. Tom, let's go to our first break. When we come back, we're going to talk capital improvements, financial accountability, partnerships, and retaining teachers, the focuses of Cindy Winston's campaign for TUSD Governing Board. We'll be right back. Here we go again. The Tucson summer heat is upon us, straining our AC units and our budgets as energy costs go up, and we hope we can get just one more year out of our air conditioners. But did you know changing your AC system out now could drop your power bill by half? All while getting 10 years of warranties and guarantees. The team at Ultra Air Conditioning can get you taken care of with super competitive cost to install and up to $3,000 in rebates. They also have great financing options available. Don't wait. Call today, 392-8008. 25 years ago, the University of Arizona took a bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. This year, we celebrate 25 years of success at the UA Tech Park. Whether it's the 20 new startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just opened up, we're celebrating this anniversary year by telling the stories and ideas of Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
With our workforce dispersed to home and the challenges of high unemployment, it's even more difficult to find the right people with the right skill sets. Leading companies are planning how to rebuild their teams and looking for critical talent now. Having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge and have positive impacts on time to hire, retention, and your employment brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and tune into Tipping Point every Thursday morning for advice and insights around workforce pivots.
Hi, my name is Shanae with HR Resolve. Whether you are a self-employed individual or hire up to 35 employees, HR Resolve is your small business corporate office. We are locally owned, providing everything from general administrative and accounting services to payroll services and hiring. I started out just me, grew my company right here in Tucson, and want to help you succeed too. Call me and the HR Resolve team at 520-867-8384 to get started.
Why I love where I live. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Like so many businesses, they had to make changes to their hours and operations during COVID-19. But I'm so excited to announce that they are now reopened for regular hours. Go to whyiloveWhereILive.com right now to see all the new products and offerings and plan a visit to their location at the MSA Annex on Cushing off the I-10 and Avenida del Convento. Why do you love where you live? Tucson, we are back. Part two of our conversation this morning with Cindy Winston, candidate for the Tucson Unified School District Governing Board. I hope to get to, I believe, an editorial that you wrote, Cindy. But I wanted to dive into some specific issues and kind of policy stuff with you. You speak about kind of financial accountability and capital improvements, and this question kind of pulls both together. I think one of the themes that's been interesting in TUSD is that traditionally it has paid administrative staff exponentially higher. The amount of spending per student on administrative costs is exponentially higher than peer school districts around the state. And even when you pull out the desegregation spending, which is a lot of money that we spend on administrative costs around the DSEG case, even after that gets pulled out, it's still exponentially higher than other districts. And so when I look at capital improvements that need to be done, when I look at teacher pay, when I look at things like that, I often wonder, as you're running, you look at the budget, is that an area or what are areas of the budget that you go, man, I would play with that. I would ask about this. I would look at that. Do we have resources right now that we could manage better to tackle some of these challenges, Cindy Winston?
Absolutely. Even with the DSEG money, you know, we have fewer schools now than when we first got that money. So you're talking about there should be more money per each school since we've had to close some. So that's my question is, how is that money being spent directly in the classroom to assist those gaps? And I do believe they're trying to address those gaps in earnest. I do believe there's a good faith effort in that. And I do believe because there's been an audit and because people are really pushing for, hey, there needs to be more accessibility, that they've been forced to make that change. And there has been a decrease in administrative costs. And it's ironic. Be careful what you pray for. You might get it. I used to say all the time, you know, I've got three administrators when I used to work in Sunnyside, and maybe between, you know, the three of them, I got one decent one. So I was like, I just want more teachers and less principals. Well, when I got to TUSD and I didn't have a principal for 2 years, I'm like, you know, I need to be real careful what I pray for. Because the last 2 years of being at Cole and had these gentlemen that were just sort of assigned to us, and they gave it their best Boy Scout try, you know. But that's not the same as having a principal that advocates for your school and manages the budget for your school and is able to answer those kind of questions. So, yes, I do believe that there are areas that need to be more accessible. And certainly as a site council administrator, I experienced that firsthand. Like when I would ask for a budget, you know, as a woman, you kind of get that, honey, don't worry your pretty little head about that. You know, and I'm like, no, I really want a budget. Well, that's within Catalina now. And I'm like, no, well, that's fine. Then hand me Catalina's budget. You know, I kept getting kind of the runaround on that. And I eventually did get one that was 3 years old and had some questions about it, for sure. One thing was like $900 for custodial cost. And I'm like, man, we don't even have toilet paper. Where'd that $900 go? Like, I don't recall that, having been here.
So, and to your other point, Cindy, you mentioned one of your other platform items related to that is financial accountability and communication. Mm-hmm. Give us a glimpse of what your standard operating, you know, kind of procedure would be as a board member. How do you communicate out? What is your accountability and transparency look like for parents and families in the district? How do you do that?
Well, I would certainly want every parent and every site council person to be able to have a budget for their school and to know what their tax credit money is, et cetera. The only way, so the way I got recruited to do site council was they're like, hey, Cindy, if you want to go on field trips, the tax credit money has to be approved by site council. And that's how they snagged me into that extra duty. You know, teachers were always getting extra stuff. And the only way that I knew what was actually in that budget is it was actually flashed on a screen at a board meeting. But it was never like, hey, Cindy, here's this information. So that information should just be handed to site. You know, like that shouldn't be something that I have to go digging for like a chipmunk, you know, like.
Right. You talked about as well teacher retention and recruitment. A lot of that is also due to teacher pay. There's been an increase in teacher pay in the district, which is great. We're still, as a state, pretty low. Which there are some initiatives on the ballot trying to address that. One of the themes that I've heard that has not not gotten a lot of interest yet is merit-based pay, where there's different policies that the governing board could set up to get more money into the hands of teachers who are really doing a great job in the classroom. Are there things that the governing board can do that they're not doing to maybe get more funding to classrooms and to teachers?
I'm curious about, I pursued the, so there's a pot of money in 301 for teacher salaries,
yes.
and you said merit pay. What I would like to see is that our teachers that are about to retire, that have given it, you know, their salaries have been stagnant for years. And as we all know that our retirement gets calculated in less, well, maybe we don't all know this, but your retirement gets calculated in the last 5 years of your salary, right? Mm. So if there was a way to increase those teachers that are about to retire who've just been stagnant for all these years, with a pot of that 301 money, I would be interested in pursuing that. I recently saw an ad that was anti-Proposition 208, right? And they said that the average teacher's salary was $52,000. And I had to laugh at that because as a science teacher with 28 years experience, Zach, I made $40,000 was my base salary. Okay, so I never met this average $52,000, man. I don't know what they're talking about, but that ain't me. Mm-hmm. And it's not most of my colleagues. So, yeah, need to vote yes on the 208, but
Cindy Winston, we've got about 2.5 minutes. You and I are both looking at that clock that just keeps moving faster and faster. As we close, kind of your final call to the action to our listening audience, you've written about how you got into teaching. Give us one quick final thought on why you're in this race and where people can find you.
So one thing I want people to understand about me is that I am the adult child of a bitter and tragic divorce, but I am not a bitter and tragic adult. And the main reason for that is my when I was 21 years old and my mother, God rest her soul, made the decision to walk out the back door of my childhood home and end her life with a .22 rifle, the first person I called was my U.S. history teacher. Her name was Nancy Milligan. And without Nancy Milligan, there is no Cindy Winston, science teacher. We had a friendship well over 30 years. And I think it might surprise a lot of people to know, they might just assume she voted for Trump in the 2016 election. That's a microphone drop, huh, Zach? For, you know, and people would say, oh, you know, that's Cindy Winston. You know, she's a granola crunching liberal. And I'm like, you know, you may not want to make those assumptions about me or how I do things or how I think, because I had one of the best U.S. history teachers anybody could ever have. And, that's who I called to plan my mother's funeral. She attended my, when I got disowned by my dad, she went to my dad's funeral with me. Was in the mother of the bride at my wedding, baptisms of both my sons, and I had power of attorney over her DNR. I didn't have to use that, but that's the kind of relationship we had. And without her, the trajectory of my life, I have a beautiful marriage. I have two beautiful sons.
The teachers are so important. So critical. You are one looking to serve on the TUSD governing board. Cindy 4, the number 4, TUSD.wordpress.com.
Yes, sir.
Is your website. People can go find you there, ask you questions that you maybe we didn't get to, donate, volunteer, contact you, all that good stuff. Cindy 4, the number 4, TUSD.wordpress.com. Cindy, thank you so much for being in the race. It's a lot of work, and for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me, Zach.
Stay safe and healthy out there.
Okay.
Tucson, we'll be back with Stephen Herman, White House Bureau Chief for the Voice of America. Don't go away. 25 years ago, the University of Arizona took a bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. This year, we celebrate 25 years of success at the UA Tech Park. Whether it's the 20 new startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just opened up, we're celebrating this anniversary year by telling the stories and ideas of Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. Here we go again. The Tucson summer heat is upon us, straining our AC units and our budgets as energy costs go up, and we hope we can get just one more year out of our air conditioners. But did you know changing your AC system out now could drop your power bill by half? All while getting 10 years of warranties and guarantees. The team at Ultra Air Conditioning can get you taken care of with super competitive cost to install and up to $3,000 in rebates. They also have great financing options available. Don't wait. Call today, 392-8008. Hey Tucson, Zach Yenser here, and I'm excited to celebrate a business that is near and dear to my heart and making it through COVID-19 successfully. Decibel Coffee Works is excited to announce they are open again for your business from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the MSA Annex, just a block west of the 10 on Cushing and Avenida del Convento. Come on by for a quick cup of quality roasted hot or cold brew, or get free shipping when you order two or more bags of coffee online. Head to decibelcoffeeworks.com for more info. Support for this program comes from Vantage West Credit Union, a member-owned financial institution dedicated to the mission of making this community too strong to fail. Banks own you, you own us. Vantage West, member NCUA. Tucson and Southern Arizona, welcome back into the 1030 The Voice studio, trusted local news and talk. You're listening to Tipping Point, daily in-depth news conversation and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. We just wrapped up with our top of the hour guest, Cindy Winston. She's a candidate for the TUSD Governing Board in Southern Arizona's largest school district. There are three open seats. Excited to continue our hour here for the next few minutes with Stephen Herman. He's the Voice of America White House Bureau Chief. We're going to talk about the president's case of COVID-19, no virtual debating as of this morning, and political appointees alleging VOA anti-Trump bias. Stephen Herman, welcome on the air. How are you, sir?
Yeah, hi, Zach. How are you?
Good. It's been a busy last week and a half for you, but it's probably been a last busy 2 years as well. Staying busy.
We are staying very busy at the White House.
And that's where I wanted to start. You're kind of on the ground floor. There are pictures of you just mere feet from President Trump many days in the last couple of weeks. You were with him, near him, right before his COVID case hit. A lot of questions around what is his health? How is he doing? Some mixed messages from the hospital, from his staff. What are you making of all of it? How's President Trump today?
Well, we haven't had a medical report from the physicians yet, but the report we had yesterday was that he continues to improve and that he has had no fever now for at least 4 days and no symptoms. And you've seen the videos that he's been putting out where he's been saying that, he is feeling fine and gunning to get back out there again.
Yes. Any concerns about a relapse, or as you've watched him and read reports the last few days, it looks like he's making a full recovery as far as you can tell?
Well, we have to rely on what the physicians are telling us and how the president sounds and appears. There has been some disgruntlement that reporters have not been getting full information. Of course, we always want to get as much information as possible. So we'll just have to see what the doctors say today and whether the president will make another one of, his video appearances.
And speaking of video appearances, with Stephen Herman, the White House Bureau Chief for the Voice of America, we're hearing this morning no virtual debating. The Commission on Presidential Debates, Stephen reflected a move towards virtual debating. It seemed at some point that the president said, "No, I'm not going to do that." What are you hearing right now?
Well, the question is whether this is some sort of negotiating tactic or he's really firm about that or not. Now, we have had, I would say in the last hour or so, a statement put out by the Biden campaign suggesting that the debate be pushed back a week where it would not be a virtual debate, and then the candidates could be on the stage together. And by that time, of course, the president would no longer be considered infectious. So a ping pong on that so far today, and we'll have to see how the president and his campaign respond to that. The president's already said that on October 15th, he will not do a virtual debate, and his campaign putting out a statement saying that instead the president will hold a rally.
Yeah, I want to get to that in a second, but there are two scheduled presidential debates on the books. Should the second one be pushed back out, would that in any way impact a third debate? Are we looking at a situation where there are, maybe only one debate left, if not no debates left?
Right.
What are you hearing?
No, that's a great question, Zach, and we don't have any clarification from that on the nonpartisan Commission on Presidential Debates that sets this all up. It's the Biden campaign that came out with this proposal to push the second debate back a week, and I have not seen anything yet from the commission on whether they'll go for that or not.
What are you hearing from the White House and staff about a rally? And is there any concern from the president's medical team about getting back out on the road in those packed situations like that here so soon after being discharged from Walter Reed.
Right. What we had heard from Dr. Sean Conley the other day is that for the president to do any traveling again, he would have to be clear of the virus, and they can test for that. And his general health would have to be okay, that he wouldn't be suffering from any side effects of the medication or lingering effects from the virus. As you know, a lot of people that have come down with COVID-19 have had this sort of something similar to chronic fatigue syndrome, where they apparently are clear of the virus, but they're really feeling wrecked for months and months. I have a couple of friends like that. So the president so far seems to look and sound fairly good, but the most dangerous point of infection, as we've heard from the physicians, is 7 to 10 days into this, which perhaps is right about now for the president. So I think the next day or two are really still pretty critical before giving the president the all clear. And that will have to come not from the president himself or us in the media, but rather from the White House physicians.
We're speaking with the White House Bureau Chief for Voice of America, Stephen Herman. Stephen, you're there in the Beltway. Really, you're literally on the ground on these issues. I'm looking at you, a picture of you, probably 6 to 8, 10 feet away the other day from the president. That's where you're at much of the time these days. There's a lot of punditry around how the president's COVID case will impact the election now under 30 days. Can you give us some objective clarity on what you're hearing out there is the impact of this news on the president's election chances? Is it as big of a deal as the media likes to paint it, or is this something that the president will use to his advantage and move on from? How invested are the American people, do you think, in watching his health right now?
Well, I think people are very, very concerned across the political spectrum. And, you know, what we have to rely on as far as what impact this is going to have, that would really come from the pollsters who are surveying the American public on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, if you don't like one poll, you can look at another, but there are these averages of polls. I think Real Clear Politics is one website that sort of blends all these polls together to give us a snapshot. And one thing I have seen from looking at those polls is that opinions are pretty much baked in about President Trump, and there seems to be very little that sways the needle too much. The other thing we have to take into consideration is that I think millions of people have already voted. So obviously, if they've already cast their ballots, there's nothing, even if they change their opinion, there's not a lot they can do about it. I think, didn't you start early voting in Arizona a day or two ago?
Yes, we did. Yeah, we're there.
Okay, so people are going to the polls right now, and you know, there might be some people out there who are saying, well, I'm going to hold off on making my decision and voting until I see how is the president's health or how he further reacts to all of this. But looking at what the professional pollsters have been telling us, there are not really a lot of people still out there like that.
Stephen Herman, White House Bureau Chief for the Voice of America. You've also begun to, as we head towards Election Day, Stephen, begin to cover Vice President Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Joe Biden has made a bit of an about-face on his policy regarding public events and campaigns and rallies to some extent. Why the change right now? But both candidates are looking at more in-person events here in the final stretch. What do you make of that?
Sure. Yes. Well, the Biden campaign at first was very, very cautious about holding events. I think, one, not to increase the chances of potential exposure for the guy at the top of their ticket, and then also not create any event that could cause exposure from one person to another who are attending. So there's been those circles, which have mostly been media early on. I was in one of those, I think a couple of times, those circles in the gymnasiums in Delaware and in Florida. They've loosened it up a little bit, and today both Biden and Harris, I believe, are in Arizona. I think there's a stop first in Las Vegas for Vice President Biden, or Boulder City, perhaps. I think the Vice President, Mike Pence, is there right now, and then, of course, coming down to Arizona as well. So they are trying to put the candidates into the swing states as often as possible, but with the Biden campaign has been very, very cautious. I can tell you that when we speak with him, say, on the airport tarmacs, I've been pushed back a few times by campaign aides who just don't want us getting too close, even though in those encounters he's wearing a mask and we're wearing a mask. So they have really been ultra cautious. Of course, there was that criticism from the president and others that Biden was sitting in his basement in Delaware. That wasn't really totally true, but he was doing heavily relying on virtual events. And now, as we get closer to Election Day, we're seeing him and Kamala Harris getting out there in person more and more.
Stephen Herman, White House Bureau Chief for Voice of America. Thanks for calling in today with an update on the president's health, the future of the debates and what those look like, and how the campaigns are finishing out this this final stretch. It's always good to chat with you. You're on the ground. You see this in live action, real time, and we appreciate a little glimpse into that with us here this morning. Thank you so much.
Check back with us anytime, Zach.
You got it. We'll do. Stephen Herman, again, White House Bureau Chief, Voice of America. Tucson, that does it for this segment, a bit of a national update. We're going to go to a quick break. We'll be back. It's our last break of the hour. We'll wrap up the major news, politics, and issues locally and nationally when we come back. Don't go anywhere.
I'm Steve, and I'm the manager at Jones Photo. The company's been around since 1947, so we've been in Tucson a long time. The services we offer for our customers are film developing, prints of any size. We work with film, we work with transparencies, we work with digital files, just about anything that you can make a print from. Our goal in servicing our clients is always to produce the best work possible.
Jones Photo, 520-327-9521.
Tucson, if you're like me and my family, COVID-19 has made us take a hard look at our finances and financial planning. If that's you too, give my friends at MassMutual a call at 274-3749. They can help you navigate through these challenging times, integrate your insurance and investments with a purpose and a plan, and create a holistic financial strategy that works for you. Call them at 274-3749 to get started. Why I love where I live. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Like so many businesses, they had to make changes to their hours and operations during COVID-19. But I'm so excited to announce that they are now reopened for regular hours. Go to whyiloveWhereILive.com right now to see all the new products and offerings, and plan a visit to their location at the MSA Annex on Cushing off the I-10 and Avenida del Convento. Why do you love where you live?
With our workforce dispersed to home and the challenges of high unemployment, it's even more difficult to find the right people with the right skill sets. Leading companies are planning how to rebuild their teams and looking for critical talent now. Having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge and have positive impacts on time to hire, retention, and your employment brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and tune into Tipping Point every Thursday morning for advice and insights around workforce pivots.
Support for this program comes from Vantage West Credit Union, a member-owned financial institution dedicated to the mission of making this community too strong to fail. Banks own you, you own us. Vantage West, member NCUA. Tucson, welcome back on Tipping Point here in the 1030 The Voice studio. We kicked off our hour, if you missed it, this morning with Cindy Winston. She's a candidate for the Tucson Unified School District Governing Board. And we had a good conversation with her. We just got off the line with Stephen Herman. He is the White House Bureau Chief for the Voice of America. Been doing journalism for a long time on the Asian for the Asian office, and now is covering the White House. And so, wanted to chat with him about the debate issue, the debate about debates that popped up today when the Commission on Presidential Debates announced a virtual format. The president said, no way. And the Joe Biden campaign obviously came back and said, well, we can just push it out a week to where there is clarity on the president's health. So we'll see what happens there. Great conversation. Stephen Herman was a mentee, if you will, of our very own Bill Buckmaster, as I understand, back in the day. Bill Buckmaster airs live here on this program at noon, and so the circle of journalism and media keeps shrinking. Speaking of the Bill Buckmaster show, I keep forgetting to bring this up. This is one of the races that I felt is really important. I've covered it a lot on this show. The District 1 supervisor race, Steve Spain, the Republican, Rick Scott, the Democrat, they will be having a debate together October 9th. That's tomorrow on the Bill Buckmaster show. So, speaking of Bill, my memory is now jogged. I've been wanting to bring that up. It's going to be something I'm going to be interested to tune into because I'm interested in the District 1 race. And that is tomorrow in the noon hour on the Bill Buckmaster show. You know, it's interesting. Circling back to the Tucson Unified School District reopening plan there on Tuesday of this week. TUSD Superintendent Trujillo recommended delaying the start date for hybrid in-person learning until November 12th. I haven't been able to watch back the meeting, but I heard it was pretty interesting, the back and forth. And this gets back to two questions that I've asked all the TUSD candidates so far. Had Adam Reagan in on Tuesday, Cindy Winston this morning, and I've heard a common theme, and it's reflected in a lot of the articles about this decision in local news, is communication. How the governing board makes decisions, how the superintendent guides those decisions once they're made, or even before they're made, how are they communicated out? I think there's a number of good things happening that have happened in the last couple of years at TUSD. It seems like communication with the parents and families in the district is still one that still needs some work, right? So that's an observation. The other is the hybrid in-person learning just continues to get pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. And it was interesting. I had reported on this earlier and then had kind of forgotten about it, if you will, until Cindy Winston brought it up this morning, that these schools are open. High-risk children, special needs, there are students at these schools in the classroom, very limited number, very specific criteria for who is in the classroom. But we do have young people on campus right now. And that offer has been on the table since school started. There was a parallel encouragement to parents, don't bring your kids to school if you can afford not to. But school classrooms are open. And I think what I am still trying to combine in my head we're seeing, when you look at the Pima County data, when you're seeing the most extreme effects of COVID, it is predominantly, the majority, it's not even close, our older individuals, which I know puts teachers at a certain level of risk. But when it comes to the children, we're seeing a lower spread and lower infection. At the same time, we know, because we've seen this with like Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, even a few months of either an absent education experience or an incomplete education experience can put children and a community's workforce back for a number of years. So I want to make science-based decisions I also want to make science-based decisions. I am growing in concern about what happens as we keep pushing back the education of our children. I'm not the guy that's going to say, open it all up today. I've never been that. If you listen to this program, you know that. But something just isn't clicking for me. And I don't pretend to have all the answers, but something's not clicking for me. It seems for a variety of reasons we're at that tipping point where for the benefit of economic health, family health, and academic health, we're at a point where I think we're tiptoeing around being just a little bit too conservative. All the things that we have to control, including health, all that included, I think we're getting to a point where we need to start making this decision. And I think the more it gets pushed out, the more concerned I get that the solution is going to be worse than the problem. And so I continue to have questions about this. I've asked all the candidates about this. I thought I'd chime in with my opinion on it. But that concern is growing. That concern is growing. And by the way, the majority, by far, the majority of cases and increasing cases that we're seeing is coming from the University of Arizona. The county at large, and I know there's schools in TUSD around, there's six of them around the university. Care must be taken. But in Pima County, most of our numbers are coming from the U of A, and those numbers are going down. The overall numbers are going down. And so I'm starting to ask, you know, okay, we've achieved what we need to do. What is that slow but steady return back to some of our institutions and normal life look like? Because we've got to get there. Is what we do today sustainable for the long term? That's always my question. Does it not just make sense for today, but can we do what we're doing now for the next 6-9 months? Because that's the trail we're on. And if you can't say yes to that question, then what do we need to adapt today so that it makes sense for the path going forward? I think we got to be thinking about that. When we come back tomorrow, and it'll be Friday, 9 o'clock, we'll wrap up the week with more news and talk. Thanks for joining us today on Tipping Point. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. We're out for today. See you tomorrow.